Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comics Horse Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Marvel chronology episode, and today we're going to be continuing the Thanos chronology, the Thanos reading order with Captain Marvel number 31. It's written by Jim Starlin, who also handles the art duties. We have inks by Green and Milgram, letters by Tom Orzechowski, edited by Roy Thomas. So, for those of you that don't remember, it's been quite the struggle for Captain Marvel over the last few issues of his series, fighting against Thanos and his schemes. This is really the first time Thanos presents himself as a threat in the Marvel Universe. We know Thanos was created by Jim Starlin himself, first showed up in Iron Man 55. Stan Lee reportedly very much disliked that story. Didn't feel like it was the right fit for an Iron Man story. Starlin was fired off the book, got moved over to Captain Marvel. You know, perhaps Stan, you know, with so many balls in the air, so many different things that he was juggling, didn't necessarily see the genius or the talent or the potential in Starlin, but Roy Thomas did. And so, you know, even though Jim Starlin was sort of in Stanley's doghouse, Roy kept him on and said, hey, you know, here's this book, Captain Marvel. It's on the verge of being canceled. So, you know, I can't put you over there on that. You can tell whatever crazy story you want to tell, and it's not really going to matter that much because the book's going to be canceled anyway. And the rest is really history. I mean, Captain Marvel went from one of their worst-selling titles to one of their best, and it really, in a way, was kind of fortuitous because it fit Captain Marvel as a character and Captain Marvel as a series dealing with the cosmic corner of the Marvel Universe. That fit much better into the story that Starlin wanted to tell. So this issue is titled The Beginning of the End. It starts off with a splash page at Avengers Mansion. We have Moondragon and Captain Marvel there. They hear sounds of a struggle coming from the next room. They believe that the Avengers are under attack. And they think, could this be Thanos? Could it be another thrall of Thanos? When they peek in and see, what they find is it's the Destroyer. Drax the Destroyer is fighting against Mantis and Swordsman and Black Panther and Vision. And Captain Marvel's like, well, why are they fighting? They shouldn't be fighting. And rather than like the old Captain Marvel would have done before he leveled up his powers, before he gained cosmic awareness, where he was very much still the violent captain of the Kree. Now with his newfound awareness, his newfound zen, if you will, really interesting take from Starlin, kind of reflective of his own personality in a way. He thinks to himself, it would be worse than foolish to try to physically separate them. My only hope lies in sudden shock and strong vocal cords. So he yells out, stop. He gets everybody's attention. He introduces Drax to the Avengers and says, you know, this isn't a guy you should be fighting. Drax apologizes, saying, in my haste, I probably caused some trouble, but I was sent here by the computer Isaac from Titan, and I'm supposed to inform you that Isaac has become aware that Thanos has gained the cosmic cube, and there's not much of a chance of us beating him, but we have to try. In fact, Isaac estimates that you, Captain Marvel, possess a 0.04% chance of stopping Thanos. And Captain Marvel says, well, that's not the greatest odds ever quoted, but it's better than nothing. So he asks Vision to request that the Avengers show up. And meanwhile, we see back on Titan, Thanos is observing all this. And as Captain Marvel says, yeah, let's summon the Avengers. I've got to tell them about the greatest menace this universe has ever faced. Thanos is kind of laughing his way through that, saying, you've gone too far, Marvel. Bringing in the Avengers could slow my plans, and the time has come for everybody who stands on my way to see that I am the light, the way, the power. And he does a little inner monologue here where he kind of gives a recap of those characters, those heroes that he sees most as a threat, including Captain Marvel, including Iron Man, who he states has blundered into his plans twice and come close to stopping him. He almost makes it seem like Iron Man almost inadvertently stopped him without actually knowing what was going on. Obviously, Drax the Destroyer, a demon creature, he calls him, that must not be allowed to continue. You know, Drax, we know, is the reincarnation of an Earthman, but Thanos, Captain Marvel, Drax himself, everybody believes that he's a construct of Kronos, created whole cloth with the sole purpose, with the sole mission of destroying Thanos. Heather Douglas, Moon Dragon, doesn't even realize that it's her father reincarnated. And last, Thanos actually says, yeah, Moon Dragon as well needs to be destroyed. She's never truly bothered me, but she is a Titan. He believes her to be a Titan. That's where she was raised. And she knows too much. She cannot be allowed to survive. And once they're all gone, the Avengers won't have a chance against me. Not without the information that these four could provide. Not to mention my pious father, mentor, and my adventurous brother, Eros. Neither one of them can thwart me either, for they are my prisoners, as soon the universe shall be. They're trapped within this bioelectric field that the cube has generated. And thus fall Titan's first patriots and last rebels. And I do want to talk a little bit about Starlin's scripting, right? He didn't script all of the issues from when he started his run on Captain Marvel. I think it was Gary Friedrich that was handling the scripting at first. We see that Starlin has now taken over that scripting. And what I find interesting, you know, these comics are a little dated, right? I mean, they are a little bit of their time. 1973, comics were, you know, a much different place back then. A lot more dialogue heavy, a lot more exposition, more, you know, thought balloons, and not only word balloons, but those dialogue boxes, exposition boxes, where we just get these big, giant info dumps. And that continued through the 80s, although it probably lessened as the decade went on. I talked when we first started covering Captain Marvel in the Thanos Reading Order about how I didn't care much for Friedrich's scripting. He used a lot of slang, which really sort of dated the dialogue by using, you know, jive turkey and groovy and this and that. I'm never a big fan when scripters do that, because again, you're locking the story into a certain time period when those kind of colloquialisms were used. Starlin doesn't fall into that trap. However, he does imbue the characters, especially the character of Thanos and Captain Marvel, with this really flowery, kind of over-the-top, grandiose kind of speech, which is also of its time. However, it doesn't kind of pigeonhole the language into a certain time period, but it does date it in that it is so wordy. So it does harken back to, you know, more of a Silver Age or early Bronze Age, maybe even a little bit of the Golden Age. So it makes the comic seem older than it is. If somebody were to redo this, right, it would be scripted much less. There'd be a lot less words. And it would actually be really interesting to see an ultimate Captain Marvel title. Like we had the Ultimate Spider-Man, where Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Bagley went back and retold, you know, the early tales of Spider-Man, not on a page-by-page or a story-by-story or character-by-character, you know, story-beat-by-story-beat kind of basis, but just went back or kind of reimagined it, kept the broad strokes, but modernized it. And that ended up being a big hit when it came out in, I think it was 2000. Man, it's been 20 years since Ultimate Spider-Man. That's crazy. So yeah, I would be curious to see what would happen if we had somebody. I mean, obviously the elephant in the room to do it would be Donny Cates, right? Like, he's killing it on Thor. He's killing it on Venom. We've seen him do some things kind of in the cosmic corner of the Marvel Universe with Cosmic Ghost Rider. So it would be interesting. That's all I'm saying. To see Thanos as that big threat, to do sort of a reimagining. But again, I don't feel that it's terrible. It does make the comics feel a little older. You're just aware that you're reading something. It's just a little corny, a little hokey. And I think comics today, not that they're more serious than what Starlin was doing, because I think Starlin was trying to tell a very serious story with, you know, serious characters. But at the end of the day, it was a little tongue-in-cheek. This is a, you know, a fantastical world and a fantastical story that he's creating. So it's interesting. I prefer this language as opposed to Friedrich's slang-filled dialogue. But again, you are aware that you're reading a comic from 1973, just because there are so many words on the page, and those words do tend to be a little flowery. So now that Thanos has kind of talked about how his enemies are vanquished or about to be vanquished, he does continue his monologue by saying, there are those that would wonder why, what is the reason for this glorious campaign? Some would think power or greed or my wish to command all. They'll be wrong. I think this is really the first time where we hear the motivation of Thanos put so plainly. Starlin has always said what's been the driving force for his version of Thanos. He says, only we two will know why. And he's talking to a hooded, robed figure there next to him. You know, it's not for the greater glory. It's not to build a stronger, united solar system. It's because I, who am probably more alone than any creature of the universe, I value this more than life itself, and that's love. So it's such a juxtaposition, right? You think about Thanos out there, you know, wiping out half the galaxy, truly bringing death to so many, you know, billions and billions, if not trillions of creatures. You know, we even saw it in the Avengers Endgame movie. But he's doing it for love, almost the, not the exact opposite of death, right? That would be life, but it's such, you know, you think of love as this positive and this force that can portend and bring forth so much good in people. And Thanos being the evil, cold-hearted creature that he is, even perverts the idea of love, right? He's killing, he's bringing chaos and death and destruction to gain the love of death itself. You know, it's almost like he's offering sacrifice. You know, he's offering tribute to death to show how much he loves her. When he pulls back the hood, we see death as she's sometimes depicted as this beautiful woman. Other times, you know, it's just that skull with no flesh at all, kind of flips back and forth. But here, she's beautiful as Thanos sees her. Love for you, my dark and deadly beauty, he says. Even though you've never spoken to me, even though I know who you truly are, I truly love you with a passion none may ever match in the star system. And that's a great last panel on that page from Starlin. We have a close-up on Thanos's eyes, one of them reflecting death as we see her there, beatific and very sensuous with the long flowing hair and the supple skin. And in the other eye is reflected her true visage, that skull, you know, lifeless and dead. So, again, really impactful, great storytelling, beautiful images. I mean, the Starlin art here is as classic as it ever gets. Very recognizable as his art, and just very cosmic and very epic. It is also interesting, though, some of the things that Jason Aaron did in his Thanos Rising miniseries, which we covered when we first started the Thanos Reading Order. It's a series that Starlin is actually not that fond of because it does seem to contradict so many of the things that Starlin does here early on. So I'd be curious. I mean, it was quite a while ago that came out, and then I think I read somewhere that Starlin said he wasn't a big fan of it. But I'd be curious to ask him about that off the record. I don't know that he would necessarily talk about it on the record. Maybe he would. I don't know. I've asked Jason Aaron to come on and talk about that series before. He's never had the time, but be curious if he still feels the same now that Thanos has been on the big screen and such. I mean, that the fact that Thanos was in the MCU and such a big part of it was a big driving force for that series to even exist. Meanwhile, back on Earth, the Avengers have assembled, and they're asking Captain Marvel to fill them in on what's been going on. So he gives exposition, as it can only be done in an early 70s comic. And it's a lot of dialogue on this page, just an information dump with very small panels, and each of the panels giving sort of a recap of what happened as Captain Marvel is describing it, with a little editorial note from Roy Thomas saying, this happened in Captain Marvel 26. This happened in Captain Marvel 27. This happened in Captain Marvel 28. Just going on down the line, basically recapping everything that's happened in the title since Starlin took over. So he first mentions that he became aware that there was something going on Earth when he battled the Super Skrull, who later tricked him into almost killing the Thing. And it was during that battle that Captain Marvel first became aware that Thanos even existed. That was followed up by Thanos himself kidnapping Marvel to Titan, where he escaped and allied himself with Eros and Mentor, trying to throw off Thanos' rule. And in the ensuing revolt, once again, Captain Marvel was forced to fight the Super Skrull, and the Super Skrull was apparently killed. But we know that's not actually true. Super Skrull has come back time and time again. I mean, he's a Skrull; they're pretty hard to kill. And then that all happened in, well, the fight between Thing and Captain Marvel first becoming aware of that Thanos was Captain Marvel 26, being kidnapped to Titan, escaping, teaming up with Mentor and Eros was 27, as was the fight and supposed death of Super Skrull, Captain Marvel 27. And then he returned to Earth in Captain Marvel 28, battled the Controller, another Thanos aide or thrall, if you will, but failed to stop the abduction of Luann, which is Rick Jones's girlfriend. And at the same time, Thanos was coming to Earth under, I guess you'd say incognito, under the cover of the Controller kind of keeping Captain Marvel's attention so that Thanos could find the cosmic cube that was hidden on Earth. So while that was going on and Thanos was retrieving the cosmic cube, even though Captain Marvel wasn't aware of it, because Thanos was becoming such a big threat, the cosmic creature Eon, I won't say kidnapped or abducted, but summoned, let's use that word, summoned Captain Marvel and gave him that next level of power, gave him that cosmic awareness, which in turn gave Captain Marvel a truer perspective on himself. He's kind of able to step out of himself and look at himself with more experience, more wisdom, and saw that he was very much a creature of violence who didn't take time to think things over. And so he, again, this is all planned out from Starlin, very well plotted, and really is what turned the corner for Captain Marvel. Previous to this, as I mentioned, his title wasn't a big seller. And after this, certainly while Starlin was on it, it was a great seller. It's classic stuff. And Captain Marvel became a beloved character in the Marvel Universe, so much so that he's never even been brought back from the dead, which I still find so interesting because just about every character has. You know, you used to be able to say Gwen Stacy, Uncle Ben, and Captain Marvel. Now it's just Uncle Ben and Captain Marvel. And they have shown up alternate versions, alternate realities. But for the most part, the main ones, the 616 universe ones, if you will, have remained dead. But again, it all happened here. Captain Marvel 30, where he gained that, 29 rather, where he gained that ability, that cosmic awareness, and, you know, greater level of power, strength, endurance, all that kind of stuff. In 30, the cosmic awareness aided him in defeating the Controller and freeing Luann. And as he's recounting this to the Avengers, he said that was my first and thus far only victory in this mad war. But a single battle does not mean an end to the hostilities. And only by combining our power can we have hope to stop Thanos. Because now that he has the cosmic cube, anything he wishes can become reality. And so Iron Man says, well, what's our plan? I do find this a little interesting. I guess Starlin couldn't think of anything. Like, we wait, the next move is Thanos's. I get that the next move is Thanos's because he's so powerful, But I just can't see Captain Marvel, even with his, without his cosmic awareness, saying, we wait. I think he would want to be a little more active and, like, go out searching, see if we can find anything going on, see if we can find another one of his lieutenants, maybe do a patrol. You know, he's a cosmic being. Are we going to have spaceships attacking? Like, what's... But anyway, for some reason, Captain Marvel says, we wait, and then no sooner does he finish saying those words than himself, Moondragon, Drax, and Iron Man all are surrounded by a blinding aura. They find themselves teleported to Titan, where Thanos is there holding the cube, and obviously Drax immediately upon seeing Thanos, I must destroy, single-minded mission, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, all Thanos has to do is give sort of a wave of his hand, and all of a sudden, those four are trapped in the bioelectric field, just like Mentor and Eros are. And Thanos says, there, I find this more suitable. I despise interruption. And he starts doing the classic Bond villain monologue here, talking about how it's fitting that before these all die, these six enemies, if you will, before the solar system falls, they're true enemies, and so they must die, but at least they're going to witness sights that will boggle their minds brought around by the cosmic cube. So in case you're wondering why Thanos hasn't already completed this conquest or whatever he has planned for the universe, we do get a little information here, a little exposition from Starling through Thanos's voice saying, in the beginning, I had to use all my willpower to overcome the destructive force the cube had developed due to mineral mutation, which apparently was something that happened to the cube in Submariner number 49, according to the editorial note from Roy Thomas. But the reward has proved worth the effort to Thanos. He now has control over the cube. Nothing's going to stop him. Scientific and natural laws no longer apply. And he starts to talk about his plan, how he does indeed have a armada of the worst space criminals in the entire galaxy, all aboard these ships. Each ship itself has the firepower to ravage a world, and Earth is going to be the first to fall victim to this. And the heroes say, well, Thanos, you are truly mad, but even if you conquer Earth, there's still another. You know, we're not the last line of defense. And Thanos says, oh, undoubtedly you mean Kronos the Supreme Titan. And then he again waves his hand and shows them that he's already captured Kronos, the most powerful Titan, is shackled by large planet-sized energy spheres. And when the heroes see this, they're sort of crestfallen that somebody as powerful as Kronos himself wasn't able to stand up against Thanos and the cosmic cube. So back on Earth, we see the Avengers are sort of confused, like, where did everybody else go? We see Luan ask, hey, what's going on? What's all the excitement? And Scarlet Witch tells them, well, you know, we're afraid that Captain Marvel, Iron Man, and the two others have been captured by Thanos, but we're not sure. We don't know. And Luan's thought is, not for any of those heroes, but if Captain Marvel's been kidnapped, so has his other self, the love of my life, the only one I care about, Rick Jones. So again, kind of some cheesy 70s storytelling there. But it kind of segues nicely into the next part of the story where, now for those not familiar, Rick Jones and Captain Marvel, through some sort of accident with Nega Bands, which Captain Marvel wears, which kind of enhances powers, Captain Marvel's trapped in the negative zone, like we've seen in the Fantastic Four so many times, where Analyst lives. But Captain Marvel is trapped there. Rick Jones found these negative bands or nega bands. He clanks them together and they switch places. Rick Jones found himself in the negative zone. Captain Marvel's in the regular universe. So only one of them, they're linked through these nega bands, but only one of them can occupy a spot in the positive universe, as it were, at a time, and the other one goes to the negative. So that's why it's not quite a secret identity, but it sort of is. So while one is resting in the negative zone, the other is active in our universe. And so Luann knows if Captain Marvel dies, Rick Jones is going to be trapped in the negative universe forever. So back on Titan, we see Captain Marvel is straining Rick Jones, and they can communicate to each other, kind of like telepathy. Rick Jones is telling Captain Marvel, hey, take it easy. You can't bust out of this thingamajig, the thingamajig being the bioelectric energy field. You're going to give us a hernia. You keep straining. But Captain Marvel's not actually trying to escape. What he's trying to do is bring his hands together to touch the negative bands together, because it releases a big burst of energy when they switch places, negative energy. And that shorts out the bioelectric field, which in turn frees all six of the heroes. So they all immediately attack Thanos, trying to get to him before he has a chance to use the cosmic cube. And not in time. Thanos holds the cube up in his fist and kind of makes this little mini tornado, and they're all kind of thrown off their feet. One of them, the captives that was freed, however, Mentor, didn't bother to try to attack Thanos. He had a different idea. This is the man who built Titan itself, including Isaac, the supercomputer, which controls everything on Titan. Gravity, atmosphere, just, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so he sends a mental command, which has the effect of throwing Titan out of orbit. Basically, he has Isaac, the supercomputer, stop the orbital controlling cosmic gyro, this gyroscope that spins around in the center of Titan that creates its gravity. And the result is, once that stops, the Titan flies out of orbit. So a really cool idea, but what really struck me the first time I read this, and I think I was, I don't know, maybe 17 or so the first time I read this. Okay, so if it flies out of orbit because the gyroscope stopped, it's still a moon of Saturn. Saturn's gravity is still going to have some effect. I think it would still, I mean, maybe it would start to degrade. I mean, we're so much more knowledgeable now with science. You know, we've seen so many different sci-fi movies and such, and we know when, you know, things lose their thrust or this and that, it's a gradual decay of orbit and blah, 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 right? So a little far-fetched that it zigzags through the solar system, the way Starlin describes it here. And even if it did stop so violently that it was flung out of orbit of Saturn and away from Saturn and not affected by anything, any outside forces, I don't see how it would zigzag. It would just, you know, because inertia and physics and laws of nature. And it's especially crazy when you look at the image that accompanies this from Starlin, and the planet or planetoid, moon, whatever you want to call it, it does indeed seem to be zigzagging through space. It's like going these big giant curves and making more than 90 degree turns. It just doesn't make any sense, but it's fun. It serves its purpose in the story, because this is a chance for the heroes to gain the upper hand. Everybody is, including the observatory itself that Thanos had trapped everybody in and was using as his headquarters. It's all a shambles. Everything's being thrown around. Everybody's being tossed around like a rag doll. Everybody except for Captain Marvel, because Captain Marvel has the cosmic awareness. And even before the gyroscope stopped, he was aware of what was about to happen, and he was prepared. And as soon as Thanos was thrown off balance, he kicks the cosmic cube out of Thanos' hand, and Thanos is, all of a sudden scared he's going to lose. No, the cube, the fools kicked the cube from my hand. I must regain it, or all is lost. And so all the Avengers are trying to grab him. Don't let him get the cube. He must be stopped. You know, Star Fox Eros tries to grab him, takes an elbow to the chin. Drax gives it a try, but is blasted with Thanos' energy blast. Captain Marvel then steps in, and they go toe-to-toe, and Marvel does seem to be able to throw Thanos off balance, at least for a little while. What I'm not sure of is why somebody else couldn't have grabbed the cube while Captain Marvel was kind of keeping Thanos busy fighting them hand-to-hand. But unfortunately, even his most powerful blows don't fully incapacitate Thanos, and eventually, at some point, Captain Marvel flies a little too slow and a little too low, and Thanos is able to grab his boot and slam him into the ground and knock him out. So Thanos says, "All opposition has been crushed. Now to retrieve the cube and begin the grand transformation." But there is one hero left, one person who stands in Thanos' way, and it's Moondragon herself, and she steps up, and Thanos kind of laughs at her, saying, the weakest of you all, you're going to stop me? And Heather Douglas says, "Well, yeah, I might be the weakest physically, but I challenge you to mind war, dun dun dun." So we get this cool giant panel, it's almost a full page spread, of Thanos and Heather Douglas matching mental wits against each other. And it really goes to show the power of Thanos as a character, the fact that he's physically able to defeat everybody. Like, I never even see him, where does he defeat Iron Man? Like, how come Iron Man couldn't grab the cube? Well, I guess at the same time that Thanos gives a chin or an elbow to the chin to Star Fox, he kind of does the same to Iron Man. So I guess Iron Man's been knocked out. But anyway, Thanos is able to fight off Drax the Destroyer, fight off Captain Marvel, fight off Star Fox and Iron Man, all, you know, powerful characters, all strong characters, and he's able to use his physical abilities to do that, showing how powerful he is, and you know, one of the most powerful physical beings in the Marvel Universe in terms of strength. But now he goes up against Heather Douglas, and he gets to show how strong he is mentally. And it says, is it seconds they battle? Minutes, hours, days? What does it matter? For in the end, Destiny proclaims that Thanos prevails as always. So not only is Thanos one of the most powerful physical beings in the Marvel Universe, he's one of the most powerful mental beings. And he also is holding the Cosmic Cube at this point where he fights against Heather Douglas, or Moondragon. So it does make sense that he would be able to defeat her. And now that he has the cube in his hand and everybody's been vanquished, the time for the grand transformation is upon us. He ensnares all the heroes once again, this time not in a bioelectric field, but just in force chains made of astral energy that far too powerful for any of them to break out of. And as he concentrates this, for lack of a better term, Kirby crackle, because that's really what it looks like, this coruscating energy starts to emit from the cube, and it keeps growing until it engulfs Thanos as these heroes look on. And then all of a sudden, the cube falls to the ground. Why? Because it's no longer needed, we're told. The grand transformation is here. The whole world explodes in a kaleidoscope of color and wonder. And when the flash of color subsides, the heroes are left to look around wondering, where's Thanos? He's gone. He's disappeared. But Mentor says, has he? And Captain Marvel says, yes. My cosmic senses register the change, Moondragon. All is not right here. In fact, nothing is as it was. Heaven help us. Everything is a tangible feeling of evil. Look, the view screen! And when they look on the view screen of the observatory, we see Thanos there. Just an outline of his head. The background is stars and planets and cosmos. And Thanos is there talking and telling him, now do you realize the genius? Now do you realize how magnificent and intelligent I am? Only I could have conceived of this. Say goodbye to Thanos the man. Enter Thanos the god. Thanos has commanded the cosmic cube to change himself into all things in the universe. So all things in the universe are Thanos, and Thanos is all things in the universe. So yes, very much a god, the god, if you will. You know, it's the classic thing, God is everywhere, God is everything. That's what Thanos has commanded the cube to do. So that is the end of it. Next issue, we're told Captain Marvel battles the insane god, but you gotta wonder, what can you do in the hands of a god? What can you do against an omnipresent, omniscient being who knows all, is all? Obviously, Thanos is going to lose, right? Like, we all know that. We know Thanos doesn't rule the Marvel Universe. But again, it's a fun idea.
I love the ideas and the grand scope of the overall story that Starlin's crafted here, especially considering this is really his first comic work. You know, this was the first story that he wanted to tell as a comic creator. I will say that I've never felt like the execution of the story quite lived up to the kind of the conception. And that's no knock against Starlin himself. I think that the artwork is spectacular. I mean, it's not quite as polished as the best Starlin work I've ever seen. But again, going back to the fact that this is his early work, it's beautiful. There's also some restrictions based on the printing techniques at the time and the newsprint and this and that. It's not, art can be a little muddy now and then. It's not quite as clean as you would like it to be or clean as you would see art nowadays. So there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I mentioned you can be a little nitpicky about the language and that sort of thing. The biggest part of why it's not the perfect comic story for me, I always go back to the idea of just how powerful Thanos is at various times. You know, here it's the Cosmic Cube. In the Infinity Gauntlet, it's that weapon where Thanos gains this omniscient power and he's never able to hold on to it. And I've talked to Jim about it. He's talked about it in other interviews. And it's always the idea that Thanos, there's this subconscious part of him that feels like he's not worthy. And so he's his own worst enemy. And he always does something that leads to his own downfall. Unfortunately, those things a lot of times end up feeling like ex deus machina, you know, just a plot device that allows the heroes to triumph. Because really, when you think about it, there's no way they should win. Thanos has taken the power from the Cosmic Cube, used it to turn himself into the god, the most powerful being in the Marvel Universe. That should be it. Game over. Heroes can't win. So if there's any kind of flaw in the grandiose story that Starlin's trying to tell, it's just that he didn't leave himself an out. He didn't build an exhaust port in the Death Star that could be bombed. He's got to rely on Thanos making a mistake, which I guess is okay. That's how we always planned it. But it does make it feel a little more far-fetched in a way, a little, more fantastical. If there were some, flaw in the cube that they could sort of exploit, might feel a little more true, or maybe maybe it's my hindsight, right? Like, I've read so many Thanos stories over the years, and this seems to be the way he always loses. It was okay for him to lose like this time, but maybe next time, Infinity the Gauntlet or what have you, if he lost in a different way. But again, I'm picking at nits here. This is a great story. It's a lot of fun. It's classic stuff. I don't actually own these Captain Marvel issues anymore, and I wish I hadn't sold them. I sold them when Infinity Gauntlet, around that time, when Thanos had a little bit of a resurgence. And then, of course, now I'd love to have them again, just because they're so fun. And Thanos has always been one of my favorite characters, and Starlin one of my favorite creators. This is well before Thanos showed up in the MCU, and that visibility is why these Captain Marvel issues are so expensive now. But yeah, maybe one of these days I'll add them back to my collection. But yeah, great story, reaching its climax in issue 32, which will give us an idea of just how the heroes are able to defeat Thanos, or if they can at all. I've kind of given some hints about how that goes down, but we'll go into it in detail when we cover the next couple issues. So I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Marvel Chronology. As always, thanks for listening, everybody. Really appreciate it. Next time, like I said, we'll be covering Captain Marvel number 32. And we're getting close, probably, to taking a break from Thanos. Not sure what we're going to switch up to next. I'm kind of thinking, I've been kind of itching to read Ultimate Spider-Man. So we may switch up to that for a little bit. And then, not sure if we'll come back to Thanos or we'll switch back to the Jonathan Hickman stuff with the Secret Wars chronology that we were doing. So if you have a preference you'd like to see Secret Wars, if you'd like for me to continue with Thanos, if you'd like to jump on board an Ultimate Spider-Man reading order, let me know. Let me know either in the comments on the LRM online page or reach out to me on social media. Let me know what you would like me to start on next. It's not going to be for a little bit. We've got a few more of these Thanos stories to do, at least probably another 6 episodes. But now that I'm starting to get caught up on things, they're going to be coming out a lot more frequently. So again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All 3 spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.